Welcome to the Subtle Cane Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, broadcasting from the Aorta of America, beautiful festival city, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where we pump out reason and pierce through the propaganda. Here we go. And we're back. If you are a new listener, thank you for gracing me with your virtual presence. If you are a returning listener, thank you for your continued support. I think today we're just going to dive right in to episode 6. Come on, baby, light my torch. Today we're going to have a discussion about persuasion and propaganda. It will lean heavily on the propaganda end of it. Before I really get into the delineation between persuasion and propaganda, I think it's important that we just get a little guest appearance from, well, our celebrity of the day, and that would be Mr. Edward Bernays. And we'll be circling back, as Jen Psaki would say, to him later. I wanted to just start with a few quotes from him. I think that it would be helpful and maybe give a little context to what we're talking about when we talk about propaganda, or at least the minds behind propaganda. The first quote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country." End quote. Next, quote, "We are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind." End quote. And last but not least, quote, "We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of." End quote. If you stop and think about what he is saying, and then also stop and think about the fact that this man really was a major influence on not only the advertising, but also the political mechanisms in our country, it helps give perspective to some of the things that I may bring to your attention, or you may already be noticing in your own life. And so I thought it was just important to give that upfront taste of what we're talking about. And now we'll get into the delineation between persuasion and propaganda. We'll jump right into the definition of the verb persuade as Merriam-Webster has it listed. Number one, to cause someone to do something by asking, arguing, or giving reasons. Number two, to cause someone to believe something, convince. Propaganda, on the other hand, is defined as, number one, the spreading of ideas, information, or rumor for the purpose of helping or injuring an institution, a cause, or a person. Number two, ideas, facts, or allegations spread deliberately to further one's cause or to damage an opposing cause. That's quite a difference. We'll break it down just a little more yet, though. Think about it like this. Persuasion is the result of logical thinking and considering different viewpoints. It is a form of manipulation, but it can be used in an honest desire to improve one's life, or in a dishonest way to change one's opinion in a way that may not benefit them, and it may even hurt them. But it is still a conscious decision that is made through rational argumentation. So the person making the decision is convinced, and they make that decision freely. They accept that decision, and they internalize it. And when it comes to persuasion, it does not mean that they have to be telling the truth. They can formulate an argument that is very persuasive, and people can buy into it. But the key is that an argument is presented to them, and they buy into it. They internalize that decision, and they make it their own based on the argument that was presented to them, and they believed that it was convincing. Propaganda, on the other hand, is used to confuse people and get them to believe something without them even realizing it. So it's a form of manipulation that works subversively to alter one's decisions without their knowledge. And there are several techniques that are used to do this. Now, I found an interesting website that gave seven main types of propaganda. And I thought that it was very interesting, and I'm going to break down all seven of them. However, in order for the sake of brevity, I'm going to just give a short little example of each of them. And then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Edward Bernays, who wrote the book, literally a book, called Propaganda. He was a very intelligent man, and I'll get back into him, but I think you will appreciate the story and how it kind of explains and also encompasses what we're talking about when we talk about propaganda. The seven different types of propaganda, starting with number one, and we'll call this bandwagon propaganda. Now, this is a technique that relies on creating a sense of the in crowd. It's the everybody's doing it of propaganda. You know, many people have this innate desire to fit in. I think a majority of people do. And I think that is panned out when you look at some of the work that's been done to study these things. As a psychologist, last name, it's Matthias Desmet. He does some interviews and he explains his theory. He calls it mass formation. I don't know that it's necessarily just his theory, but he does a very good job of explaining mass formation. I'll look into that a little further. So this type of propaganda is to make you feel like you are complying with social norms, because complying with social norms is a very strong motivator. There are different cultures that are a little more susceptible to this. The more tribal or familial cultures are particularly susceptible to this kind of propaganda, because social standing is highly dependent on how well you perform on this level. How well are you conforming to the norms? So bandwagon propaganda, the everybody's doing it. Number two, card stacking propaganda. Now, this technique focuses on drawing attention to the positive aspects of an issue or product and downplaying or avoiding the negative aspects. It's highly effective and it's widely used in advertising. So you want to think about maybe a fast food ad or something, and it says, our French fries have 35% less fat, or this new breakfast cereal has 25% more protein. Not mentioning that all the other ingredients in the cereal are terrible and will probably shave a couple years off your life if you eat it regularly. So that's card stacking propaganda. Next, we move into number three. It's the plain folks propaganda. So this technique, it utilizes quote unquote ordinary people to sell the agenda or the product. And the idea is to kind of nurture a feeling of camaraderie with the person that's advertising. So they pick like Joe Schmo down the road, or just some normal Sally, you know, just somebody that you can relate to. Hey, that person's just like me. That's where these social media influencers you see that have really rose to the forefront of advertising in a very interesting way as of late. So you'll have like a TikTok person who has no clout, has no social standing apart from their social media account, but the people relate with them because they're, it's just another person like me. And you pay these influencers to promote your product. You know, you see this in other commercials too and things like that, where they try to pick a very average looking person instead of the gorgeous model or something. And it's just like hey, this guy does it, or this gal does it. So, you know, it'll work for you too. I see that being used more and more. You know, the use of celebrities to sell agendas and products, it's still in play. And it's still effective. But the plain folks technique has been making real headway as the influence of this high society kind of Hollywood glam idol worship. It's kind of waning, I think, in my humble opinion. That brings us to number four, the testimonial propaganda. And this is the Hollywood and pop culture icons, or the scientists, or the doctors. And it's used to leverage like the proposed credibility or likability of the person that's selling the product or the agenda. And so you cart out one of the Kardashians, or you cart out one of the rappers, or you might shuffle out a Dr. Fauci because he's the trusted face of science. Science is truth. So you put your trusted face in front of the cameras and have them spout their lines in an attempt to kind of piggyback off that credibility or likability. And that's how you sell your product or agenda. So next is number 5. And we'll call this the glittering generalities propaganda. This is the one that uses hyperbole and metaphors, and it kind of induces a false sense of reward from the product or agenda. And the key is to generate a kind of a feeling of euphoria that's tied to whatever agenda or product you are trying to propagandize. So here's an example of this. Turn on the TV anytime during like daytime TV, or watch YouTube and wait for one of these awful ads that you got to watch, and you'll see a pharmaceutical ad come up, and it'll be for something terrible like anal leakage or something. And you'll have a beautiful woman skipping through a field of flowers, and there'll be butterflies and bluebirds and a wonderful picturesque sky and a landscape. And she's just dancing, and it's slow motion, and her hair is perfect, and everything's perfect. The sunlight's just coming off her face. And now that she's taken whatever drug it is, she's living this dream, this heavenly life. And look at her. And she no longer has anal leakage because she's taken this drug. And this whole sense of euphoria comes with it, even though the actual drug or the side effects or the condition that it's treating have absolutely nothing to do with the woman skipping through the field. It is made that way to give you that sense that the world will just be right. So that's the glittering generalities propaganda. Then you have number 6, which is a little bit of an opposite of that. And that's name-calling propaganda. And so this uses kind of the same hyperbole and generalizations, but rather than focus on the product or agenda at hand, it's focused on the opponents or competitors. It's the proverbial mudslinging you see in politics, the over-dramatization of a vote somebody made or a statement somebody made to just paint them in this terrible light. And that is supposed to take you away from the actual issue at hand and make you feel a certain way about a person or a product. And it would be a competitor, of course. And that way you would hopefully, in their eyes, flock to them, the company selling the product or the people selling an agenda. So that's name-calling propaganda. Then we have number 7, last but not least, transfer propaganda. So this is where you project negative aspects of a product or agenda. So what you do is, if you are doing something that you know people will not approve of, you just accuse your competition of doing it. And you do it frequently and loudly. There was an author and an activist named Saul Alinsky who famously advocated for this technique in his book, Rules for Radicals. You might want to look into that. The book was dedicated to Lucifer, kind of a giveaway. The sentiment behind it was not actual Satanism, at least as it's explained, but more of a shout out to the original rebel, which is kind of how he phrases it. But either way, a little telling. Maybe pick somebody else to be to dedicate your book to. So essentially, whatever you're doing that would be frowned upon, you accuse your competition or opposition of doing it loudly and often. So that's transfer propaganda. Okay, so those are the 7 types of propaganda, at least as I've found. I did have a reason for going through all those different types of propaganda, I think it's important to at least try to put that, just plant those seeds in your mind. And then next time when you're watching a commercial or you're seeing a politician talk or you're watching the news, you just maybe will think back and say, wait a minute, I see that. And I know that that is what I'm looking at. So I think that would be helpful. Or at least I hope, I mean, that's my hope, that it is helpful and you will recognize that in the future. And now we're going to move into Mr. Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And as I said, he was the quote-unquote father of public relations. He was born in 1891 and didn't die until 1995. He lived till he was 104 years old. He literally wrote the book on propaganda and called it propaganda. He then, later on in his long life, he never really stopped working, by the way. I think he was like 100 years old and he was still getting paid big bucks to consult, which is amazing to me. It, regardless of what I think of the man and what he did, very impressive. So he is held in high esteem by many, which I think is more of a sad commentary on them than anything. You know, I can appreciate his genius, but I also loathe his life's work. Let's get to the essence of the title of the episode, Come On Baby, Light My Torch. What that is in reference to is this Torches of Freedom kind of a rallying call that Edward Bernays came up with. It was one of his most successful campaigns. So smoking was actually very taboo for women in like the late 19th and early 20th century. And one of the outcomes of women going into the workforce, though, and taking over for the men who went to World War I, was that they were emboldened. And the first wave feminism, it was actually called first wave feminism, kind of sprung forth. There was like a major social reorganization happening. And the suffragette movement started really gaining traction. Capitalists are very good at recognizing markets, and the tobacco companies were no different. And they took note and they saw the potential for a burgeoning market in women. Now enter Edward Bernays, and he leveraged the connection between smoking and independence for women. And in 1929, he actually paid women to smoke cigarettes while walking in the Easter parade in New York City. And he dubbed the cigarettes Torches of Freedom. So he had observed a subconscious link between women smoking cigarettes in public and their independence. What a genius thing to do. So it was taboo for them to smoke in public. So at this point, by 1929, women are smoking. You got the flappers and in the speakeasies, and things are starting to get a little shaken up. You know, it was the roaring 20s, and women were starting to really feel their independence. And in order to kind of overcome, for the sake of the tobacco companies, that social moray against women smoking in public, he linked it in the minds of the women to freedom. Well, he recognized that there was a subconscious link, but he played off of that and started calling it Torches of Freedom and paid those women to walk in the parade and got eyes on it. And that was a big deal. And it was very effective, but it even gets better. So Lucky Strike cigarettes, well, they were striking out with women. They couldn't figure out why women weren't smoking them. After all, they were Torches of Freedom, right? So they hired old Eddie to figure this out. At the time, for whatever reason, I don't understand fashion. If you've ever seen me dress, you'll know that. But green was not fashionable. And the Lucky Strikes packs of cigarettes were green with like a red bullseye on them. Now, it sounds like an odd thing to focus on, but Bernays, he's a master of recognizing things and manipulation. And he figured out that women weren't smoking the Lucky Strikes because the packs were green. It wasn't matching their outfits, believe it or not. That was a major concern to them, and he figured it out, even if it wasn't a very conscious concern to them. He goes back and talks to Lucky Strikes, and he says, hey, I figured it out. I got it. It's the green. You got to change to green, man. It's not working. And Lucky Strikes, well, all their packs are green. They're pretty invested in the brand. And yeah, they tell them, no, why don't you just get them to smoke them anyway? And Bernays, not being someone who would turn down a challenge, did something very devious, but also genius. So he started throwing balls for women and throwing money at the suffragette movement. So he was throwing like fancy dinners and balls and promoting the suffragette movement. And what happened was he used the same green on the theme of the rallies and the balls and the dinners and the other events, the same green as the green of the Lucky Strike packs of cigarettes. It did not take long for women to start associating their torches of freedom and their newfound liberation with, you guessed it, Lucky Strike cigarettes. They were smoking the ever-loving heck out of them. This story has always stuck with me. And it's not because of the actual details of the events, however interesting and curious they are. It's the tactics and the thought process that was behind this story. And I don't know if I really sold it very well. The psychology behind understanding, recognizing these various elements, these cigarettes, linking them with the newfound liberation, paying the women to smoke them and calling them the torches of freedom, and then pulling a fast one on the women by hosting all these balls and parties and rallies for women's rights and making the theme color the same green as the Lucky Strike cigarettes. What a devious man. A very clever man, but what a devious man. They did not know that they were being propagandized. They did what he wanted them to do without ever knowing that they were being sold. They were propagandized. You know, that's what captured my attention. You remember, the father of public relations is the title he was given. Now turn the clock forward to 2021. Take that level of understanding and allow for the almost 100 years of perfecting and improving upon the system for unconscious manipulation of the public. Add to that equation the steady and advanced exposure people experience through technology. And then tell me, how confident are you that your thoughts and your choices really are your own? For all of you listening, you are valued, you are loved, and you are worthy. God bless and good night.
There's no turning back once the fire's lit. Let the embers glow and be done with it. I'm startled by my lack of fear as the world I love turns to ashes here in the dancing.